Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca. And my guest today, I'm delighted to have back Jim Petras. I think regular listeners know who Jim is, but for those who don't, we always get new ones. Jim is Binghamton University, New York, Professor Emeritus of Sociology. He's had a long, distinguished academic career. He's a noted figure on the left. He is a well-respected Latin American expert who is pretty familiar with most every other area of the world, if not all of them, a good many, because Jim writes on so many vital topics. He's also a prolific author, many, many hundreds of articles, dozens of books. He's got a new book out, not out yet. He's got a new book coming out in late August. We'll talk about it on the program today. And when the book is out, Jim will come back and we'll talk about it after I've had a chance to see it. It's called Global Depression and Regional Wars, the United States, Latin America, and the Middle East. Oh, Jim, welcome to the program. There is so much going on that we can talk about.
Yes, Steve. I look forward to today's discussion since there's so many topics that are really hot at this moment.
And oh, they really are, Jim. About 15 minutes ago, I turned on Telesur out of Caracas, Venezuela, their television, terrestrial and satellite. I was watching live pictures from, it's got to be Tegucigalpa, Honduras, and it looked like the military was out with shields. There was a good-sized, not huge, but good-sized crowd. They seemed exuberant, not violent. And what I wanted to do to begin the program was play a few moments for listeners, even though it's in Spanish. But they switched to Mexico, and now I see Evo Morales on the screen, probably a film. If it comes live again, I'll put it on for just a few moments. But maybe we can begin talking about Honduras. Obama's first coup, huh?
Well, of course, it's a coup. The U.S. has been using Honduras as a colony and also as an aircraft carrier. If you remember, 1954 coup against the Guatemalan elected president, Arbenz, was overthrown. The army operated out of Honduras. 1961, the Bay of Pigs invasion. Honduras was one of the launching pads for that. And, of course, during the 80s, there were 20,000 U.S. financed mercenaries, the so-called Contras, that operated their death squads out of Nicaragua. And this long history is embodied in the U.S. military base that we have there with approximately 800 U.S. military officials and complete penetration of the entire military hierarchy in from top to bottom by U.S. officials. So there's no way in the world that this coup was launched, planned, and made operational without the active support and complicity of the U.S. I think the thing that's important is that the dynamics of the consequences of the coup has forced the U.S. once again to modify its stance, at least its outward posture. But I will say this. There's two things we need to do when we analyze the U.S. relations, the Honduran coup, is the need for U.S. to adjust to world pressures and world and regional opinion and governments' position, and secondly, that U.S. policy operates on multi-track.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Jim Petras. Jim, I was so eager to get on the air with you today because Honduras and hopefully we can talk about Iran too. You wrote about it. I wrote about it. One quick comment, and then please pick up with the second track you were talking about. I read, and you can probably verify this, that every Honduran officer in the military from captain on up is trained at the U.S. School of the Americas, the School of Assassins. Does that sound pretty reasonable?
Yes, Steve. What's more important, though, is the follow-up. After they attend the school and they come back, they are supervised by military advisors from the U.S. military base in Honduras, and they have continuing interaction from lieutenant up to general. They are under permanent supervision, so if anyone decided after they attended the school that it wasn't their agenda, they have very little room to wiggle out of the U.S. influence. I think the question that is raised by Honduras is that the U.S. once again overplayed its hand. It launched this coup and expected little reaction since they control the military, a majority in Congress, and control the Supreme Court. They didn't count on the enormous and powerful rejection throughout Latin America, including Central America, including its own client states like Mexico, Peru, Colombia, and left the U.S. totally isolated. And its first reaction of not condemning the coup and not calling for the reinstatement of President Zelaya left it in the first 24 hours absolutely isolated. And this follow-up, the OAS condemnation, Obama started backing off, and Hillary then condemned the coup, but never called it a coup, because by calling it a coup, it would be an automatic cutoff of all the U.S. aid, $80 million. And Washington cannot just dump its puppet military regime. So they refuse to call it a coup, though every single government in the world except Washington calls it a coup. And the reason is that Washington is now trying to manipulate a bad situation by forcing the organizations not to put further pressure, in other words, to follow up on their condemnation and the demands for the reinstatement of Zelaya with sanctions, economic sanctions, with breaking diplomatic relations. So now with the UN condemning it and with a visit from the OAS pending, Washington is now in a bind. I'm sure in conversations with the military to see how they can salvage a very bad situation. I think the position coming out is that there'll be some kind of prolonged negotiations eventually, in which they will perhaps shoehorn Zelaya back as president, but stripped of his powers to initiate a referendum or a consultation to reform the Constitution. Now, you might say, what is the purpose of the U.S. supporting the coup? I think it's absolutely clear that it has to do with Zelaya's foreign policy, that he accepted foreign aid from President Chavez in Venezuela. He affiliated himself with the new regional integration, ALBA, and he was demonstrating a certain degree of independence from U.S. Foreign policy, and as a bad example for the rest of Central America. It's one thing for Latin American countries or South American countries to cut loose from Washington's domination, but Central America is seen as an extension U.S. colony, a whole region, and this was unacceptable to Washington. So Zelaya is a progressive liberal. He's no radical. He increased some wages and increased the bargaining position of trade unions and peasants, allowed them to function without constant repression. So I think his progressive liberal policies, democratic policies, is one of the reasons that he resonates with all of Latin America. Now, the governments in Latin America, most of them, are similarly liberal democrat. And if a coup takes place against them, against Zelaya, what's to prevent a coup taking place in Chile or Brazil or Ecuador, what have you? So all the governments in Latin America do not want to see a precedent set of overthrowing a liberal democratic government. And that's why they have such a forceful reaction. They don't want to see a domino effect, because the military in Latin America has a reading. If the military in Honduras can get away with it and retain the military and economic aid in the United States, then that's going to be an encouraging factor for them, particularly with the deepening economic crisis that's beginning to affect Latin America, and certainly is going to create a certain degree of social and political polarization. So there's all these factors that enter into the conflict. And once again, as in other circumstances we've seen, like Obama's escalation of the military in Afghanistan, it doesn't resonate with anybody, neither in Europe nor in Asia. So there he goes, sending another 40,000 troops into Afghanistan, and just today launching a 4,000 troop Marine offensive, the biggest thing since the Vietnam War, the biggest U.S. military offensive since 1972. So we have the most bellicose president since the Vietnam War. There's no question. If you look at the global picture, Obama has moved troops and supported coups in a way that is perhaps unprecedented. Bush sent troops into Iraq, occupying the country, and Obama has built up a force of Iraqis of over 400,000 troops. And the idea is for U.S. troops to retain a fallback position as they pull back from the open city occupation. They'll be out in the provinces continually, and there'll be backup troops to let the Iraqis take the first hits.
It's amazing what he's done in 6 months, Jim, all through the campaign. He scared me because people liked him so much. They really saw him as a symbol of change. And yet if you took a look, all you had to do was take a look at his voting record in the Senate. and you could get a pretty good clue as to just what kind of a president he would be, and then listen to some of the things he said on the campaign trail. Forget the fluff and the promises and so on. Follow places where he went to give addresses, like AIPAC. I mean, it was very clear what he would do, and yet people were so mesmerized by him. It shocks me, but it happens all the time, Jim. People get fooled, and they let themselves be fooled repeatedly. So they were fooled again. And I said yesterday on the program that I live in Chicago, and Obama's from Illinois. And on election night, November 22nd, this city erupted. When the election results were announced, this city erupted like Times Square on New Year's Eve. I wasn't out there, but I shook my head. And I said, my God, I don't know how long it will take, but the public will finally come around sooner or later. It may take a while, but they'll come around sooner or later and realize they've been had again. This guy may look different. He may sound different. He may appear to be a completely different guy than George Bush, the anti-Bush, who really stripped away that mask, and he's the same as George Bush.
Well, 2.5 million jobs have been lost already in the first 5-plus months of Obama's presidency.
Oh, yeah.
2.5 million jobs have been lost, and we have in front of us the fact that all of his moves have been backfired. Let's start with the stimulus package that he tried to sell to the European Union at the summit. It was rejected by all the major countries except England, and they said we don't want to pour that kind of money into financial sector, especially Germany, which has a big manufacturing sector. The next thing, he convoked the NATO summit and tried to get the NATO countries to increase their commitments to Afghanistan. Once again, he was rejected. Then he tried to go to the summit of the Americas and keep Cuba out of the regional organization, the OAS, and maintain the embargo. He lost 33-1 again. Then he has this coup in Honduras, and not a single country supports the U.S. Client in Honduras. So,
hey, let me interrupt. We got a break again. Let's take that break, and then we'll come right back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
To the News Hour. I'm on with Jim Petras. We're circling the globe. Jim, let me just take a moment or two and turn this on. Live from Tegucigalpa, a Telesur reporter on the ground talking to people. You'll understand it. I won't. Let me just put it on for a moment or two.
Can't hear us.
You won't get that on CNN or Fox News here in this country in English. In English, Spanish, or any other language, Jim. Anything important that he was saying?
Well, there's severe repression in Honduras. There's been one presidential candidate of supporter of Zelaya has been murdered. There's been other political activists murdered, and there's hundreds of arrests and scores of wounded, some very seriously on the case. It's probably a level of repression that exceeds anything we've seen in recent days in Latin America. And Washington has not said a peep, as they didn't say anything with the massacre of the Indians in Peru a month ago. Obama, the loquacious, indignant critic of repression in adversarial countries like Iran, he's quick to condemn any attempt at maintaining order in an electoral context. He's got his mouth shut when there's a repression under an illegal military regime. That tells you a lot about the way he uses selective indignation. I might mention one thing here, that it's not only the military card that they play in Washington. They also use diplomacy. They also use economic pressures. For example, just this week, they eliminated the tariff, favorable tariffs to Bolivia, costing them 20,000 jobs in textiles and shoes. And this is after a conversation they had with President Morales of Bolivia, saying they're going to treat the country as a partner, as an equal. And suddenly you have this blow against the Bolivian exports, provoking Evo Morales to call Obama what he is, a liar. Here he is promising fair and equal treatment and then turning around and causing 20,000 workers to lose their jobs in Bolivia. The same thing can be said about Venezuela. Now, there's a return of economic diplomatic relations. That's one positive step. But on the other hand, the National Endowment for Democracy and the other U.S. Agencies are continuing to funnel money into the oppositional groups. So you have what I call a multi-track operation. When the military option fails, as it did against Evo Morales in last September when they tried to have a military coup, it was defeated. They then shift their emphasis toward diplomacy and using economic instruments. The shift in policy in Iraq, where they formally retire troops from the streets of the major cities and continue to engage in warfare in the provinces and as backup troops in case there is any slippage among the Iraqis. So you have to follow the context and sequences. The U.S. Doesn't oppose the coup and in Honduras, and then as it's totally isolated, it backtracks, condemns the coup without calling it a coup, without suspending economic aid, goes 4 hours in the UN moderating any resolution so that it doesn't have any teeth, condemning Honduras. So there's a lot that needs to be contextualized and see the sequence in multi levels at which Washington is operating. It's not simply a straight line. It pushes the military line. When that fails, they backtrack and try to cover their backsides by giving some token criticism. And then when that doesn't work, they try to weaken any resolution that would be favorable to a democratic solution.
Jim, as you know, this is the way an aggressive imperial power operates. The U.S. is the world's global hegemon. They do business like this everywhere. They get along fine with every country that will not exert its independence. Any country that will go along with the U.S. way, be a nation in the U.S. orbit, we can be a very, very good allies. Of course, it means benefit
well,
to us.
I think we have to bring in the case of U.S.-Israeli relations, where you have a peculiar situation where Israel builds settlements while Washington criticizes it. But I think it's a wink and a shake of the hands here. I think it's understood in Israel that the U.S. is not going to use any pressure on Israel, any economic sanctions. So they say, okay, Obama's going to say things that we don't agree with, but we'll go ahead and do what we want because
we'll be right.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm with Jim Petras talking about numerous countries. Jim, one more comment on Honduras, and we can surf the globe in any direction. I'd like to talk a little bit more about Iran, but Eva Golinga is following events in Honduras. She's close to Chavez. She's doing it from Caracas. I'm on her blog. She writes, as of last night, the coup government passed a constitutional decree suspending all constitutional rights, so it means they can do anything they please. Sounds a little bit like Venezuela 2002 when the coup government suspended the Bolivarian Constitution. That lasted 2 days. Your earlier point, I think what's coming, Obama may be embarrassed enough, as you point out, I think what's coming is a deal, and the deal will be that Zelaya will come back and he will be sufficiently neutered so he'll serve out his term, I think, what, to the end of this year, early next year? And then he's gone, and there'll be a new election. Now, what happens then, who knows? But I think the deal will be that he will come back, but really won't have much power to do anything.
Well, I agree with you on one proviso. Washington and the military regime in Honduras will not accept even that kind of a compromise unless there's enormous pressure. Now, the repressive measures they have now suspended any democratic assembly, any democratic speech. They can go into anybody's house at any time and arrest people without any specific charges. So you got a police state to eliminate pressure from inside the country. There's a general strike that's been called by the trade unions, etc. So they're trying to take the pressure off internally. Now, externally, the pressure for that kind of a settlement that you mentioned will only come if the Latin American and United Nations take some consequential actions, like retiring their ambassadors, expelling Honduras from the OAS, and particularly if they cut off or impose economic sanctions. I think in those circumstances, Washington will have to move. But if it's simply a diplomatic slap on the hand, Washington may not even go the route of that kind of a compromise of bringing back a president as the captive of the institutional power. So,
Jim,
let's just keep it in perspective. Obama is deeply committed to this coup regime and will only shoehorn the return of the president under duress, under international pressure, where he would remain exposed as the only backer and sponsor of this coup.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you, Jim. I'm thinking also of the situation with Aristide, the first coup, the Governor's Island Accord that brought Aristide back in 94. And they thought they had him contained. They didn't have him as contained as they thought they did. But some kind of a deal like that where they let him come back if they think they have to, as you say, and then they think they have him contained. So whatever he wanted to do, he will not be able to do as he truly wished. But again, we have to watch and wait. I agree fully, Jim. They'll do nothing that they don't have to do, and they'll only give the inches that they feel they're forced to give.
Yes, and I think the bigger picture that I think we need to deal with here is there's no way that any of Obama's domestic agenda has anything progressive about it. His moves on the earth warming, the carbon cap, was so full of loopholes that it's actually increasing the amount of carbon dioxide in the air. And not a single environmental group has endorsed that cap and trade bill, because it is no way going to favor the environment. And the same thing with Obama's regulating Wall Street. I mean, that's the biggest joke in the world. It's created conditions for the repeat of the crisis. He's reinforced the speculators in every way by subsidizing them. They're back in business as normal. And his health bill is so exclusionary of people that the most it's going to provide insurance for possibly 10% of the people that don't have coverage now. That's slashing the Medicare, Medicaid. So he's taking from Peter to pay Paul. And the overall effect of his health bill as it stands now is again, going to be a disaster. And I think if you think about it in the big picture, with his priorities on imperial expansion, as the empire grows, the domestic economy declines. And I think that's the lesson that we have to point, that as the empire grows, the republic is becoming more and more impoverished.
I think that's part of the plan, Jim. It really is very sad to say, but virtually everything, Michelle Chosudowski, Global Research Editor, my co-host, he wrote an article late last year where he called, I forget his exact words, but he called Obama's economic plan, well, he called the economic plan in place. Obama had been elected, and I think what he knew about what was coming, he called it absolutely regressive, grievously regressive, a plan that could only have one outcome. It would be economically destructive. And if I remember the points he made, that the spending will be going I remember the 3 points. The spending is going primarily to bailing out the big bankers, to Wall Street, number two, to the defense establishment, and number three, on the order of $500 billion annually to pay the interest on the national debt. And that doesn't leave a lot. There's discretionary spending, but we're squeezing it. We are absolutely squeezing it. And I think there's literally a scheme in place, a plan. They probably have it all written out, chapter and verse, to crush Social Security over time, do the same thing to Medicare, Medicaid, and virtually all social benefits. And it's shocking that they have a guy who people still trust. He's losing his popularity, Jim, but it's ebbing very, very slowly. I think he's going to lose it all in time because people are being hurt so badly that finally they're going to wake up and say, well, now this guy promised he's going to get me a job and he's going to fix the economy. And as far as I can see, things are getting worse. Who is this guy anyway? And they'll end up hating him.
Yes, I think it's true. And, I think the process is already underway. 90%, there was a poll that said 90% of the Democrats and almost the majority of the Republicans want a national public health plan. 90% of the Democrats. And here is Obama fiddling with the insurance companies, making all sorts of concessions. He's fiddling with the pharmaceutical industry. He's ignoring the majority of doctors who want public health and working with a small privileged elite that heads the American Medical Association, ignoring 60% of the doctors for public health. So you have a government that's totally unresponsive or unrepresentative of its constituency, and repeated this kind of repeating of all the measures that go contrary to the demands of the voting public of his own party. An overwhelming 90% of the Democrats polled want a universal health plan. And here he is dismissing it out of hand. Pelosi won't even invite advocates of a single payer plan to the congressional hearings. And she says off the table. So we need a political realignment in this country. We need those 90% Democratic voters to relocate into a different political party. And I don't mean the Republican Party, because they are on the same wavelength as Obama, despite the fact that they criticize some of his exuberant spending for Wall Street. So I think this is really the key issue here. When you don't have a government that responds to its voters by carrying on imperial wars while the domestic economy is shrinking, you cannot spend $1 trillion on wars and expect to fund a new health plan to stimulate the economy. This is the key. Empire is incompatible with democracy. It's incompatible with a domestic recovery.
And very sadly, Jim, there really isn't a dime's worth of difference between the Democrats and the Republicans.
But the constituency for change is partly among the absentee voters and overwhelming the base of the Democratic Party, electoral people that voted for him and are being repudiated. And somehow that overwhelming majority of Democratic voters has to find another political expression. And I think that's the challenge. We have a majority of Americans who are for a progressive agenda. They don't want military spending in Afghanistan when they have 20% of the population in the United States either unemployed or underemployed. That's the latest statistics from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. 20% people that are unemployed, people that are looking for work and are only working 1 hour a week or 5 hours or 30 hours, people that have stopped looking for work, etc. We have 20%, one-fifth of the population is without work or working in a way that doesn't sustain a living. So this is it. You cannot continue sending more troops, increasing military budgets, bailing out banks, and providing jobs and a decent wage for the American people, providing we're the only industrialized country and many other countries that has it doesn't have universal health coverage. They have it in Japan. They have it in Germany. They have it in England. They have a plan similar but not as complete in Canada. And here we are, the only country in which the majority of people that go bankrupt is because they can't pay their health bills. Nowhere else in the world do people go bankrupt because they can't pay their medical bills. Nowhere in the world. And I think this is the political context for discussing all the everyday issues that we confront with Obama and the White House and the Congress and the two parties.
Not only don't we have Medicare for all, single-payer coverage for all, we won't even discuss it. I mean, that really is a thumb in the eye to the people who want it.
Well, because you don't have a democracy when 90% of the population Democrats, and when you have 70% of the entire population, Republicans and Democrats included, that demand this kind of legislation, you don't have a democracy. You have an oligarchy. You have an oligopolic government, and we should say that. This is not a representative system here.
Well, as you know, Jim, and you've written about this, I've written a bit about it. Obama has directed the wealth of this country, including the wealth that we create out of thin air, so-called Federal Reserve, creating money, creating debt, clicks on a computer keyboard, whatever amount they want to create, a billion, a trillion, 5 trillion. So the numbers are absolutely staggering, possibly as much as $14 trillion. Most of it allocated, not yet handed out, but enormous sums handed out, and it's gone mainly to the people, to the corporations, the big Wall Street banks that caused this mess in the first place. And giving them all this money will do nothing to heal the economy. It will simply wreck it further than it's being wrecked already, because they are using this money to consolidate, to give themselves big pay raises and bonuses, to do all of the things that they want to do to get bigger and stronger and so on. You mentioned Obama's so-called financial reform plan. He wants to give the private banking cartel, Federal Reserve, more power. What we need to do is abolish the Federal Reserve. We need to get rid of it. He's got a stealth item in that plan called a financial stability board. Came out of the G20, which is really the G7, the powerful countries, some sort of an institution that will be a global institution with power. No Congress, no government has voted for this. No legislature has voted for this. Just some G7 or G20 agreement, really, again, G7 agreement, that there'll be this super body that will have global powers, financial powers. Well, according to who? Our Congress didn't vote on this. Now, this is only a proposal. Whether it'll come to pass or not, who knows? But this is the kind of stuff this guy is putting out. So it's health reform for the insurers, Jim, and Big Pharma and the rest. It's financial reform for the big Wall Street banks and global financial institutions. It's big funding for the military. He proposed the biggest military budget in history, more than all other countries in the world combined, at a time that this country doesn't have a single enemy anywhere in the world. And if you throw everything in, including the homeland expense and all the supplementals, we're talking about well over $1 trillion a year, money we don't have. But they want to cut back on food stamps. They want to cut back on essential things for people in this country. To throw all these dollars at the Pentagon, at the big defense contractors, for all the profiteers that benefit from this. And this is a guy who promises change.
Yes, it's going from one crisis to another, and of course, committing these 4,000 Marines to an offensive in a region that is completely under the influence of the Afghanistan resistance, what they call the Taliban, is going to increase the number of casualties to the U.S. and. I noticed the campaign in Iran has fizzled out now. Mark Weisbrot has brought up an interesting issue on the electoral process that I think we should comment on.
Let's do it when we come back, Jim.
Program.
One last segment. We'll continue with that. We'll be right back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Our final segment with Jim Petras. Jim, before we jump to Mark Weisbrot from the Center for Economic and Policy Research, and he does a lot of writing on Latin America, John Williams, economist, has been on this program. We had an employment report out this morning. I think the number reported was about 460,000 lost. John has 513, but if you take out this fictitious birth-death ratio, he says the number of jobs lost in June, his words, likely top 700,000. And the unemployment rate that he lists, if you put in all these crazy categories that they exclude, he's got it at 20.6%.
Yeah, that's my own calculation. Going back to this whole scandal they mounted against the Iranian elections, one doesn't have to be in favor of the clerical government, but I think the campaign, the purposes and motivations were to destabilize the government and ultimately put in place a pro-Western, a pro-U.S. regime that would facilitate its wars in the region. But Mark called and spoke with a number of Iranians, experts and observers, and throughout the 50,000 voting sites, there was present members of the opposition parties watching that there was no stolen ballot boxes or duplicate voting or stuffing the ballot boxes. And then they were present, the same opposition party representatives were there during the vote count. So this idea that it was a voter fraud was something that the parties of the opposition, their representatives, did not observe. And there's not a single major claim of voter fraud from the ballot watchers for the opposition. 50,000 sites, they had their party reps, they watched the voting, they watched the vote count, and they didn't say it was a fraud. So this was all cooked up out of whole cloth, this whole idea of voter fraud. You have voter observers from the opposition, that's a guarantee that the process went according to the electoral rules in Iran. So this is something which none of the media has reported, and none of the politicians in Europe or the United States are willing to discuss or debate or question. And even the people that went in the streets, mainly the privileged students, have never raised the issue. What about the electoral observers from their own party? Why don't they bring forth some testimony from a multitude of voter observers and say, look, I was in such and such a city and such a neighborhood, and I observed the following stuffing of the ballot box. They didn't do that. They didn't say that. And I think, again, this attempt to destabilize a government which is critical of the U.S. policy in the Middle East is a part of this offensive that Obama's launched, and it's defeated. And unfortunately, there were many casualties among the people that were thrown out in the street, many of them unwilling dupes of these manipulations. And no one mentions the $400 million that was allocated under Bush and is continuing under Obama to destabilize the government. And
oh,
all
so
the-
much, Jim. I've got to interrupt because, unfortunately, we are out of time again. It's painful to end it, Jim. I wish we could keep it going. But, we will have another chapter of this, and there'll never be a shortage of things to talk about. Jim, my great thanks
yes.
for coming on.
Thank you.
A terrific hour, Jim.
Yes, thank you for mentioning my book, Global Depression and Regional Wars, which will be out late August.